ESPN College Football Podcast.
It is the Wednesday edition of the ESPN College Football Podcast. Got a couple of subs in today for Kevin Agandi and Booger McFarland. Matt Berry, along with my guy Sam Acho. I typically do the Sunday and Monday Feinbaum and Herbie, but my guy Acho came in, pinch hit for Booger, probably out golfing right now. Acho, good stuff, man. Thanks for hopping on.
Man, thanks for having me, Matt.
It's going to be fun. I can't wait to get into all the college football news of the day. But first, get the inside scoop on the biggest NBA news and hear from the stars on and off the court on the Woj Pod. Listen wherever you get your podcast. Back to college football. I can't even keep count now, Och. Was last night the third, fourth, fifth iteration of the college football playoff rankings? Regardless of what they were, there wasn't any change in the top seven. But there still are storylines within the confine of the top 25. Was there anything in particular that stood out to you?
Well, one thing that stood out to me a little bit was the fact that Houston was ranked. And I think this, the reason why this is important is that, like, I've been talking all kind of season about Cincinnati and strength of schedule and all this stuff. And initially I was like, man, November 20th, they get a chance to play SMU and SMU may be ranked, but then SMU lost. And so now all of a sudden SMU is no longer ranked. And so if Houston keeps on winning, Houston's in the top 25, and Cincinnati keeps on winning, they meet in the AAC championship. I think that could help Cincinnati's strength of schedule. So that Houston being ranked for me was kind of one of the under the radar things that people may need to pay attention to.
Yeah, because typically, you know, you look at, I mean, when you're looking at some of the Power Five guys, you're looking at Ohio State, who has six Michigan State left, six Michigan this next weekend, seven Michigan State this weekend. They've got the strength of schedule. They're going to play themselves out. Alabama has Arkansas this week. Auburn's not ranked, and they have number one Georgia in the SEC championship. Going to work itself out. When you look at number three, Oregon, they've got Utah this weekend ranked. They're likely going to get Utah again in the Pac-12 championship. So you're right. Of any team that needed a ranked win on their schedule, it is Cincinnati. Now, I don't know what took the committee so long to rank Houston. They haven't lost since week one against Texas Tech, but I'm with you because two things that are going Cincinnati's way. And I have not been shy about saying Cincinnati's schedule is garbage and they haven't looked good against some inferior opponents, but the win against Notre Dame keeps looking better and better and better. And you're right. Houston finally getting in gives them another opportunity to say, hey, we beat Houston in the American Championship. They're a ranked team and SMU this week.
Yes, and the Notre Dame win. Like, that's another thing that I got excited about. Hearing a little bit of how Barter was saying, well, they haven't thought about having Notre Dame in front of Cincinnati. For me, that's important if I'm Cincinnati because Notre Dame has looked really good over these last couple weeks, right? Early on, you're trying to figure out who they were. They looked really good. But Cincinnati has that ranked that head-to-head matchup win. And so the better Cincinnati looks and gets, obviously they don't have anybody on their schedule the next couple of weeks. I mean, any ranked opponents or any big-time challengers.
Right.
Cincinnati knows they're not going to get usurped by Notre Dame. They know now they can't get usurped or taken over by Oklahoma because Oklahoma lost. Initially, the first ranking was like, man, watch out for those behind you. Well, those behind you have lost.
What about Oklahoma State?
That's okay. Boom. So there, Oklahoma State. So they got Texas Tech, which should be a winnable game. And then they have Oklahoma.
They got Bedlam.
Yes. So if you win those two, and then you have a Big 12 championship likely against Oklahoma, maybe Baylor, depending on what Oklahoma does these next couple of weeks. Oklahoma State could. Now, that's what I was saying. Like, I don't want to say it.
Say it.
Don't
put it's any a podcast, ideas. Acho. Say it.
I don't want to put any ideas in the committee's minds. But Oklahoma State could potentially make some noise. Now, I don't think that an undefeated Cincinnati with wins over a ranked Houston and maybe I don't know if Houston would be ranked. Yeah. Wins over ranked Houston. I don't think Oklahoma State will jump ahead of Cincinnati. But you talk about this, all these things working themselves out. Ohio State and Michigan still got to play. Maybe they knock themselves out. Maybe Ohio State loses. Maybe Michigan loses right. One of those games. All that, and then all of a sudden, now Oklahoma State and Cincinnati can make it in that thing.
Yeah. Look, here's why I find it entertaining and hilarious. One, I'm glad you and I get to do this Wednesday edition of the podcast, because I don't typically get to react to the rankings, because Sunday with Feinbaum, I'm reacting to the games. Monday, similar thing with Herbie and setting the table for the weekend. This is fresh that happened last night, Tuesday night, the rankings. People get so fired up. They get so angry and fired up over it. And then when you just said it, Houston's ranked and they have to get Memphis Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern. That's not a game you want to deal with. One, when you've already clinched a spot in the American, because if Memphis goes and clips Houston, guess what's gone? That ranking. So that impacts Cincinnati. The Ohio State thing I just mentioned, people fired up about Michigan State and Michigan head-to-head. That's going to work itself out. We're going to play the next 2 weeks, and it's all going to be settled.
Yeah, my biggest message, and I got caught up into it early on, then I kind of had to pull myself back and reel it in a little bit. No matter what, I probably shouldn't say this, but these rankings don't matter. These rankings do not matter. Like every week, every Tuesday night, 7:30, whatever. Oh, no, it doesn't matter, right? Michigan was ranked ahead of Michigan State. It doesn't matter, because if Michigan State loses or Michigan State goes and beats Ohio State, well, boom, all of a sudden, problem solved. If Michigan goes and loses to Ohio State, boom, problem solved. If Cincinnati loses to Houston, boom, problem solved. You know what I mean? Like these, if Cincinnati loses to SMU, all you need to do if you are on one of those players on one of those teams is find a way to win. Things will work themselves out. The only people that are, you know, if you will, it's out of your control, I really would say, is a team like Notre Dame, because there's very little that Notre Dame can do to jump ahead of Cincinnati. That's probably the only team. But Ohio State, you beat Michigan State and Michigan, you have nothing to worry about. Michigan, if you go beat Ohio State, all these things will work themselves out. And so for me, I don't even pay attention anymore really to the rankings when they come out, because if I'm thinking, if I'm a player on that team, just win, baby, win. All I got to do is win.
I will say, and we just discussed it a moment ago, I don't know that – I think Oklahoma State's going to be a problem for Cincinnati. If Oklahoma State wins out, they're in.
Okay. I agree.
Because Oklahoma State, you had mentioned their schedule. I'll pull it up again. Texas Tech should be a win, 10-1. Bedlam, you're going to have a ranked Oklahoma team. So you win Bedlam, you're 10-1. No, 11-1.
Yep. And then you go either play Baylor or Oklahoma,
which would be another ranked win.
Yeah. So I'm with that. Barry, what I'm saying is I'm with that, but I think people are sleeping on the fact that like Ohio State might lose to Michigan, right?
But keep in mind, that would only be one conference loss. Their only loss is at a league.
Right. But okay, check this out. So let's say Ohio State loses to Michigan State this week.
Okay.
And then they lose to Michigan.
No. Well, if Ohio State loses twice, they're done. But if Ohio State loses to Michigan State.
Right.
Now we're going to get so convoluted in the tiebreaker.
I'm trying to find a way for one of these Big Ten champs not to make it. One of these Big
Ten. A two-loss Big Ten champ might not get in.
Bingo. That's all I'm trying to say. So, like, that way Oklahoma State could be in there and Cincinnati. Let's say somehow – Ohio State loses, and I don't know the math on this one, but Ohio State has two losses and they look bad in one of them. And let's say you put them, and Oklahoma State is still winning. Cincinnati's still winning, right? Let's say Michigan. Well, Michigan, you know, goes and beats. I'm still trying to figure out how this is going to work, but I think there's a way. I think there's a way for a two-loss Big Ten champ to potentially not make it, and a one-loss Oklahoma State and a undefeated Cincinnati in there with a team like Alabama.
Let's do this, Och, with the risk of getting maybe one or two of these tiebreakers wrong. So okay. Ohio State, this is the Big Ten East now.
Yep.
Ohio State is 7-0 in conference play.
Okay.
They've got Michigan State this weekend.
Okay.
Okay.
Good.
So Michigan State,
somebody got to lose.
Michigan State is 6-1.
Okay.
So if Michigan State wins, 7-1 in conference, Ohio State 7-1 in conference. If Michigan wins, 7-1 in conference. Mm-hmm. Now, if Ohio State goes on and beats Michigan, 8-1 in conference, still two losses. Michigan State, they win their final game, 8-1 in conference. They would hold the tiebreaker over Ohio State because of the head-to-head. They would get in the Big Ten championship. They would likely face a three-loss Wisconsin team.
Right.
And if Wisconsin were to win that, then the Big Ten's out of it.
There it is. There it is. Bingo. And just like that, I don't need to change anything. So that happens, and then Wisconsin wins. A three-loss Wisconsin's not making in top four, and a two-loss. So the Big Ten could technically be out of it.
Yes. Right?
Oklahoma State runs the table.
Yes.
Oklahoma State is in.
No question. Oklahoma, Cincinnati. Oklahoma runs the table they're in. If Oklahoma goes 12-1 with one loss coming to a ranked Baylor, you're telling me they're not in?
Yes. Yes, I am. Because let's say Oklahoma was already at 8, Barry. You're looking at me like I'm crazy. Oklahoma was already at 8. And then they went and lost to Baylor. Now they're at what, 13 or something like that, right? And let's say they run the table. Let's say they got Iowa State, which is unranked. So, okay, an unranked Iowa State win, right? Then they got Bedlam, right? So let's say you do beat Oklahoma State. You ain't going, maybe you'll go up to, 8-9, whatever, maybe 8-9. Yeah. And then you beat Oklahoma State again or Baylor. You might go to 5, but let's just say Georgia, Alabama, and let's kind of erase our scenario. Remember our previous scenario?
Yeah. Okay, it's a race. Never happened. Ladies and gentlemen, Georgia, the jury, please strike the
Georgia, Alabama, Big Ten champ. And then you got Cincinnati. No,
see, you already screwed it up.
How?
Because are you saying Alabama beats Georgia in the SEC championship? If Georgia beats Alabama, they're out.
I'm saying if Alabama beats Georgia by 3.
So then it's
in the SEC championship.
So then it's 12-1 Georgia.
Yes.
12-1 Alabama.
Yes. Both are in.
Both are in. You're forgetting Oregon has to play Utah twice and the Civil War. I think they're going to lose one of the next 3.
I agree. But Georgia, Alabama, the jury forgot about your Big Ten. So Big Ten champ. I don't see Oklahoma jumping up over Cincinnati. I don't see it because they started off so low. Okay. That's my only thing. They started off at 8, and you can't lose late. This is just college football. You can't lose late.
You can't.
Losing late hurts you the most.
And that's what I love about it. And that's what I love about people getting fired up. We just did 10 minutes here on scenarios that we probably just made up half of them. Zero of them made sense, but that's the beauty of college football. It's like, hey, let's play this out. Let's get on the field. Let's finish the Big 12 season with Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. Let's finish the Big 10 East round robin. Let's finish the Pac-12. Let's play it out. And I think that's what we're in store for here for the final few weeks of the regular season.
I got a question for you, though. I got a question for you on this because you've been in media for a long time. You've been doing it, right? Sports Center, you got work, you doing your thing. But you also love college football. So we in the media, if I will, get caught up in all of this. We do. Oh, every Tuesday, what's going to happen? And how could Michigan be ahead of Michigan State? Which, if we want to go there, I actually agree with that. But if we want to, I don't know if the jury is going to,
because I agree with you.
Okay, cool. So we getting caught up in all that. But you also love the game and you know the game. So it's like, to players, it doesn't matter. It shouldn't matter. Maybe it does. Maybe not. It does. But it should not matter.
But it does.
But does it, though?
To the players?
Right? Remember Michigan State. They lost.
Right.
They lost. And all of a sudden, Mel Tucker's like, hey, don't worry about it. We still control our own destiny.
Here's where I'm going to get on. So go ahead and get to what your question is about me being in the media and loving the sport.
So my question is, it's really a statement. I believe the media makes too much out of these current rankings.
They do.
And I believe that players in the locker room, I think they care. And I think that's like the media's fault.
Are you ready for my Barry soapbox on this?
Let's hear it.
I'm about to get so get off my lawn with this.
Let's hear it.
The problem right now with college football, top to bottom, you're not going to change my mind. The problem with college football right now is our social media culture. Period. End of sentence. You can't convince me otherwise. Why? Because a decade ago, players didn't have direct access to fans' opinions on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, all of this other garbage that's out there. Now, when one thing happens, when one team loses, fire the coach, the players are garbage, our season's over. The players are subjected now to the outside world. What did coaches always used to tell you when you were playing? Don't worry about the outside noise. The only thing that matters is inside this locker room. Well, guess what? The outside noise is so accessible now, it's actually ruining the sport. Because the week that the rankings came out, Michigan State didn't have a target on their back all year. It was just a cute, fun story. Look what Mel Tucker's done in year two at Michigan State. Second, they got the number three ranking attached to their name. What did they do? They lost to Purdue. Because that week, social media was telling them that they were so great. And they puckered up and they lost.
But Matt Berry, is that social media or is that media?
Both. Because they're one and the same.
Good. Because a lot of players like LeBron, as an example, during a lot of seasons, finals, championship time, he's completely off of social media. He deletes his social media. Like, players can do that. Some teams I've been on, the coach has said, hey, I don't want y'all on social media. I don't want y'all posting after games. I don't want. So that can happen. But you turn on the TV and it's like, man, or you read an article and it's like, man, how are we ranked behind Michigan? Like, head to head should matter, right? Like that piece. Because I got caught up in that. I'm like,
yeah, but see, that's, you know why, Och? You know why you got caught up on that? Is because
why?
We in the media, and I'm taking myself out of this, because I'm not a hot take machine. I really don't. I'm not going to go out there and just spew diarrhea of the mouth to get clicks. That's what media has turned into. Media has turned into, what can I say that's so inflammatory that hits the news cycle, the 24-hour Twitter cycle, that makes people lose their mind? That's what the media has become. And especially the college football media, because now I've got coaches that I talk to for my Thursday night games and just assistants around the country. They'll tell me, man, we've got the support of the administration, but the fact that we've got to defend ourselves after every loss, it didn't used to be that way. The fact that Chris Del Conte, athletic director of Texas, had to put out a statement of support for Steve Sarkisian yesterday in year one is absolutely absurd. Why? Because the media has turned into diarrhea of the mouth, spew whatever you want and see what takes.
So many directions we could go, because the Chris Del Conte, right? I went to Texas. So, I did the spring game at Texas, their game against Rice in week two or three. So we could go there. But we could also go to the area of this. Some of it is hot takes, but some of it is actually, well, explain yourself, right? Like Gary Barta, explain yourself. How would you, like, if you.
I'll tell you how.
Okay, go ahead.
With Michigan State, if Gary Barta would just say, yeah, Michigan State was up 16 late in the game, they were the better team. Michigan State at home, they found a way to come back and win. Yes, they won the game, but we still believe Michigan's better. Would that be better for you?
Well, for me, no, I agree. I agree with the rankings. That's my thing. Everybody's like all upset, but I'm like, hold on. So I think head to head matters, but head to head isn't everything. And this means a lot to me. Back in 2009, I was playing at Texas. We were 11-1. Oklahoma was 11-1. 2008. Oklahoma was 11-1. Texas Tech was 11-1. Texas beat Oklahoma 45-35. Undefeated. We go and we lose to Texas Tech on a lap to the Michael Crabtree.
Michael Crabtree, Halloween weekend. Was, yep.
Yes. On the last second, whatever. 11-1. And then Oklahoma goes and just blows Tech out of the water. 11-1. We were all undefeated, but 11-1. Then it comes to who's going to go. And there was a BCS era. That's kind of how that BCS got deleted and erased. And so Oklahoma went to the Big 12 championship, yet we had beat them handily 45-35. And so we're sitting here like, well, head to head. So in my opinion at that time, head to head mattered more because it affected me. But in this scenario, yes, Michigan State beat Michigan head to head. head-to-head should matter. But Michigan's only loss is to Michigan State, which was ranked number 3. Now they're 7, 8, whatever they are right now, top 10. Michigan State lost to Purdue. And Purdue is not a bad football team. But there should be some sense of like that is a worse loss than Michigan's loss. That's part one. And then part two, the committee. Actually, no, I'm going to stop at part one. What do you think about all that?
All right. So part one, here's what I say. I've never been prouder of you because, because I've been saying this forever and I've gotten plenty of that social media backlash for it. I'm well aware. I watch 15 games a window every window until 1 a.m. on Saturdays. I'm not missing anything. I know that Ohio State lost to Oregon. Yeah. I know that. But I think Ohio State is a better football team.
Yes, yes,
and
yes.
And Oregon yes, yes. lost to a garbage Stanford team.
Stanford team, yes.
So
yes.
I'm in your boat of, yes, head-to-head at some point does need to matter. But body of work, my eyes tell me that Ohio State's got one loss to Oregon. Oregon's one loss is bad. And right now, Ohio State is playing better.
So that's where, so like if I had to rank, I think, okay, who are the four best teams? And there is a flaw in this argument. I love people listening. I love for y'all to think about it this way and see if you have a flaw in your argument as well or how you would rank it. I listen and I say, okay, what are the four best teams? A couple months ago, I sat in with Gary Barta,
yep,
with these committee members and did like a mock committee, you know, a mock selection.
So and for people listening, all of us that work in the sport at ESPN, since the inception of the playoff, they send us out. They literally send us to Grapevine where the selection committee is in their room. We use their machines. We use their computers. That's what Sam's about to talk about. We've all done this. So we have an innate understanding of it, at least what goes on in the room from that standpoint. Go ahead.
100%. Yeah. So I get kind of where they're coming from, where they say, well, in every statistical category, nearly everyone, Michigan is better. Right. So I get that. But in my ranking and from what I heard from them, they say they want to pick the four best teams, period. Who are the four best teams? And so when I look at it, I get it. Head to head, Oregon beat Ohio State. But that was week two. Ohio State's a much better team now than they were back then. And they'll have a chance to prove it. That's the great thing. They'll have a chance to prove it. So I have Ohio State, in my mind, above Oregon. That's number one. We could also talk about Oregon. You know, Oregon will have a chance to prove themselves.
Correct.
That's number one. And then number two, with Michigan, I thought Michigan was a better football team than Michigan State when they played. Like I predicted, if you will, Michigan to win because I feel like they had more playmakers. Now, Michigan State won, and I'm glad about it. But then the very next week, as we talked about, Michigan State loses to Purdue. So in my mind, Michigan is a better team than Michigan State. So when I say four best teams, I go in my Georgia, Alabama, even though they lost to A&M. A&M was playing really good football, and Alabama has been up and down. Georgia, Alabama. I still like Ohio State. And then Cincinnati-ish. Yeah. You know what I mean? That's the thing. So there's my – and so that's my – but the dilemma is this. Because if you go four best teams – let's say Alabama loses in the SEC championship. You can't put a two-loss Alabama in front of some of these other teams. That's the issue. Issue number one. Issue number two, you could also say, man, Alabama hasn't played anybody, right? All their wins are looking less, not as good now. And their losses right. are looking worse. And so that's the only issue. I go by stats are great, but I'm like, as I watch these teams, Georgia is one of the four best. Alabama is one of the four best.
For now,
it could all change in the next few weeks.
Yeah, because I don't think Alabama, even though they've got residency in the college football playoff, I don't think that if they lose to Georgia, they should be in. They lost to Texas A&M, who just lost to Ole Miss. So A&M's got three losses on the season. We can't use different rules
for different people
just because it's Alabama. And I've resigned to this. If Ohio State or Michigan State, any of the trio of those teams, one loss, automatically in. Oregon, one loss, automatically in. Georgia, undefeated, automatically in. If it comes down to a one-loss Big 12 team or an undefeated Cincinnati, I will sit there on selection day and I will pound the table for Cincinnati. Because at this point, They've perfected everything they've been asked to do. And of any year in the college football playoff, if you're going to let a group of five team in, this is the year to do it. Because you get one of two things that come out of this. You get the first thing. Cincinnati wins their playoff game. The group of five, I told you so, they've got a seat at the table. Or Cincinnati gets in the playoff, gets their doors blown off. You can cite that until there's expansion for the committee for the rest of time. Well, yeah, we let a group of five in, and they couldn't even make it to halftime. Now, I don't think that would happen with Cincinnati. There are two things. Either way, one side would win the argument if Cincinnati gets in. That's why, to me, if they're undefeated, let them in, and let's settle this argument once and for all.
Cincinnati, if they win ugly, let's say they win by one the next couple of weeks, like they win by two, and then Oklahoma State blows out Oklahoma, blows out whoever they face in the Big 12 championship, I think there's a better argument for an Oklahoma State team because they would be, they could, you could argue, be the better team. That's my only argument on just letting Cincinnati in. Now, granted, I'm on the side of letting Cincinnati in because they've earned it. Not because you're let, because they've earned it. Undefeated, they've earned it. It's not letting them in. It's like we've earned it.
They've earned their way in, right. But what happens then? Oklahoma State's lost to Iowa State. We'll ignore that. Because we're not ignoring other losses. We're picking apart other losses. And I would say Oklahoma State's one loss, here's where I would go. I'd boot Oregon. If Oregon's a one-loss conference champion and there's no head-to-head between the two and they both come out 12-1, whose loss is worse, Oklahoma State to Iowa State or Oregon to Stanford?
Right, and right. I'm with you.
I would boot Oregon. I'd put Cincinnati in.
I'm with you. But again, you. Go ahead.
We're with all these scenarios, and we're going to play itself out. Now, I want to get your take on this before we wrap up here on the Wednesday edition of the ESPN College Football Podcast. We had yet another firing in college football on Tuesday with Virginia Tech letting Justin Fuente go after 6 years. To me, the ridiculousness of this was not that they let Justin Fuente go. They basically spent $2 million more to fire him now as opposed to December 15th on the early signing period. I believe there are three things that are impacting and ruining college football, and one of them right now is the early signing period. It's amazing when we scream for things, we get them, but we don't understand the ramifications of them until it's too late. We wanted an early signing period, and all it's doing now, Och, it's getting coaches fired before the season ends, and I think it's got to stop. Because I mean, they're basically saying 10 recruits are worth $2 million.
I think my issue is this. Early signing period aside, and Justin Fuente fired, right? Jimmy Lake fired. So many coaches in the last couple of weeks getting fired. And maybe you could say rightfully so. But when it comes to recruiting, how do I even say that? I don't know the right way to say it. But so many people put, I guess, they get five, quote unquote, five-star recruits or four-star recruits, and these people might not even be good players. Put it that way. Whereas you get these big-time recruits, all of a sudden it gives you more leeway as a coach. Because like, hey, I have the number five recruiting class in college football. So this doesn't really answer your question, but it's really more to the point of, what if there is a way, instead of looking at how many star, like, you know how many NFL players were two-star, three-star, no-star? But what happens is college coaches, they want a longer leash, a longer leeway. And they say, hey, look, I have a top seven, top four, top three recruiting class, knowing good and well these players can't play. But I know I don't want to get fired, so let me just get this five-star guy who, for whatever reason, they gave him five stars. That's my issue. Didn't answer your question. But.
Yeah, but look, they could have a five-star talent, but a two-star chest, which means
right.
that they can't, they don't, they're all sizzle and no substance, which we right. see a lot. I just right. think there needs to be a way where the coach, like the good old days, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, where a coach finishes the season. And on December 3rd or December 4th, whatever championship season is, or even when that team season's over, We evaluate the program top to bottom. Then we make our decision on the future of our coach. You bring the coach in before Christmas, and then you have the holidays off, but then you have all of January and the first couple of weeks of February to put together your recruiting class for the old signing day of the first week of February.
Right. But here's my issue with keeping a coach around. There's two scenarios, and I'd love to hear your opinion. Even once again, people, everybody listening, Gary Patterson, hey, we're going to go in a different direction. Can you finish out the year? Da, 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 right? Nah, I'm out. Ed O, hey, we're going a different direction. Can you finish out the year? Yeah, I got you. I'm finishing out the year. LSU, I think the players on that team currently have been done a disservice by having a coach who's still there knowing good and well he's not going to be there. And I think they've played accordingly. Whereas TCU, even though they lost last week, the week before, brought in a freshman, right? Chandler Morris, Highland Park, balling. Let's go and find ways to win these games. Balling, right? We'll figure it out with our head coach in waiting, interim, whatever. And so, I don't know. I'm not as big of a fan of the, hey, let's keep the coach around, because these players need to know who's going to be with them the next year.
Yes and no, but
or the rest of the season.
But I don't know why the administration has to come out in week five and say, or in Clay Helton's case, week two, hey, we're going a different direction. Well, what good did that do? If he had a two-game leash, why'd you even bring him back to begin with? If you're LSU, just play it out. Like, you're LSU. Yeah. Like, what did getting rid of O then do for them getting Billy Napier, Jimbo Fisher, or all these big way, Dabo and Lincoln? What has that done for them? Nothing, because you know why? Those other coaches are still coaching their team. And then all that coach has to do is go to his weekly press conference and shoot down all these rumors, which then creates a distraction for the team he's currently coaching.
Yeah.
It just turned into it's turned into a mess. And so I just
– But what would you – so you would like for the team just to not say anything, even though you know you're going to fire your coach, and just let them finish out the season?
Finish it out. Finish what you started. It's my same thing with the transfer portal. Transfer portal should be closed during the season. Finish what you started, and then after the season, if you want to leave, leave.
We don't have time to have this argument.
We don't.
We could fight about this one,
Barry. We don't.
Because I'm coming from a player. Get me out of here. If my coach is going to –
Why?
My coach isn't going to play. So let's – bro, some coach – like Justin Fields was – who was he backing up? Justin Fields was like –
Jake Fromm.
Like Jake Fromm. And Jake Fromm was a really good college player, and he's had some – but like if for whatever reason my coach doesn't – let's say my coach doesn't see my value or whatever. Now, I get it, right? Wait a year. I get that. And I don't even disagree with you as much as kind of initially I felt. But some of these coaches aren't as great as we think that they are.
I agree.
And so I think there should be an opportunity for a player to leave. And mind you, player, you're taking a risk. It may not work out for you. This may be the worst decision, but hey, sooner or later, you got to learn your decisions have consequences.
So I think, I think we're in the same spot here. What I'm saying is during the regular season, same thing for the coach.
I see where
you're coming from. X wants to transfer on December 4th when the season's over, by all means. But the second camp starts until the end of the season, the transfer portal needs to be closed.
Yeah, you're saying for coaches too. For coaches too. Coaches can't go anywhere.
Once we show up to fall camp, to summer camp, until this next weekend, next weekend's championship, no, next weekend's Thanksgiving, but the weekend after championship weekend, or really the season ends for most schools next weekend, right? Week 13.
Yep.
Once we step foot in summer camp until Thanksgiving weekend, no one leaves. This is the team that we started with. We're going to end with it. Coach, you can get fired Thanksgiving Sunday. Player, you can transfer Thanksgiving Monday, but until then, you stay.
I can't agree with that.
And then it's uniform. Like then everyone's playing, but why should coaches be worrying about the portal? I had a coach last week, and we're getting long here, and I knew this would happen. But I had a coach last week, a head coach, tell me that they now in their meetings, because of the way it is, have to consider an entire two deep because of the portal to keep kids around.
That's fair. That's fair. Hear me out. And I think you're probably going to vehemently disagree. I had a coach. I talked to a coach early when this stuff was going on. And I wasn't a big fan of the portal, all this stuff, just like you. And then this coach who had experience in the NFL, he was like, dude, I see this like free agency. He didn't say that verbatim, but I could tell by what he was saying. He was viewing it like NFL free agency. So he was getting ahead of the game. And he was saying, I'm going to do this well. I'm going to think about these things. So, hey, if you want to go, he didn't say this, but this is where he's going. If you want to go, go. I'm going to get somebody else better than you. Oh, we don't know who our quarterback is. Don't worry. There's going to be a transfer. We're going to find a way to figure this out. So everybody, what did somebody say? Like, get right or get left. Yeah. Like, you need to figure this out. Well, Jameson Williams, right? He wasn't going to play at Ohio State. Now, all of a sudden, he's the dude at Alabama. Mind you, it wasn't during the season. I get that.
I don't want you to misunderstand me. I'm for the transfer portal. I just think there needs to be an open and close date for it. If Jameson Williams is not going to play because of Olave, Garrett Wilson, and Smith and Jigba, by all means, go find a better opportunity for yourself. There just needs to be a window of when it's allowed. That's all I'm saying.
What if a coach is just tripping? Like, what if it's like, you know, like the stuff at LSU, some of the rumors and stuff, and it's happening in week two and week three and week four? Well, I'm going to be here anyways. I can't go. You know, is that an exception?
I think Nick Rolovich and the Jimmy Lake situation is a prime example of that. The vaccine mandate.
So you're saying there are exceptions.
There are exceptions to that. Yes. If there's a coach just not acting appropriately up to the university standards, then you probably need to go. But if it's simply about wins and losses, like, you tell me what USC's done better without Clay Helton than they've done with him.
Yeah, nothing.
So,
but is there an exception for last question? Because I know we got to.
Yeah.
Can there be a positive exception for players? Not an exception like, nope, you got kicked out because of it, but an exception where it's like, you know what? Yes, you can go for a, maybe one of these coaches, you know, gets caught up in a big time.
When are they going?
During the season. No. I'm saying during the season. And a coach like you talked about, Edo, whoever, they're getting caught up in a big time scandal. They were the guy who recruited you and they're out. If those coaches are out, can the players leave?
No. I think you're just stuck.
You're just stuck.
No, you're not
our
stuck.
Coach, if you're our GM.
You're not stuck. You finish what you started. Your coach didn't live up to the standards. Well, then guess what? You as a player and a leader, you live up to those standards. And at the end of the year.
What standards? The coach is gone. He's supposed to set the standard.
Okay, but he didn't. And they removed him for it. Now
what do you do?
Respect the interim coach and play. And then at the end of the year, if you genuinely don't believe that that is no longer the place for you, go find it. I'm all for the freedom of that. I just think right now we have so many things up in the air with college football. We just can't enjoy it anymore. I'm calling the Louisville game tomorrow night. They had a running back who's contributed, just entered the portal with 3 weeks left. You're playing, you're contributing. 3 weeks left, you're going to bail on your team and your brothers? Get out of here. Wait. And then if you want to, go.
Time is of the essence, my friends.
No, and you're nodding your head. We can go on this for hours, but listen, end of the day, hit us up on social media because I know you always do, yelling and screaming at us. Otch, really appreciate you hopping in, man. This was a lot of fun. Let's do it again soon. And I'll leave the listeners of the ESPN College Football Podcast with this. I work with Joey Galloway. I've worked with him for 3 years. We work together 16 hours a Saturday, almost to the point where we want to kill each other. Acho tells Galloway, I like Quincy Carter as a quarterback. Quincy Carter was the quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys when Galloway was there. The look on Galloway's face, if I could have that bronzed into a statue, I would keep it for the rest of my life.
I was a kid. Quincy Carter. I'm not even going to. Yeah. Hey, I like Quincy Carter. I like Quincy Carter. I wasn't an analyst. I was a fan of the game, a fan of seeing this quarterback play football. When I was a little fifth grader, I felt like I could be Quincy Carter. So if Joey's mad about it, Joey, you know where to find me. Okay?
I love it. I love you, buddy. Appreciate you hopping on with us. And remember, tell your friends about this podcast. It's a lot of fun.
Absolutely.